You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 11th of May 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, we've had an update on the coronavirus situation here in Britain from Boris Johnson yesterday. There's going to be a slight loosening on restrictions. People are going to be allowed to go to the park more than once. Allowed to play golf and tennis, but only with people from their own household. In a month's time, they're hoping to get primary school children back to school, and at the start of July, maybe we will be allowed to have gatherings once again. And this is all only happening in England. Wales, Northern Ireland, and Scotland are all continuing with the same lockdown that they have at the moment, which I can see is possibly going to cause problems there. You've got different strategies being employed in different parts of the country, which you can say is a good thing, really, because you want to be able to deal with the problems that are unique to your area, rather than having a one-size-fits-all policy for the whole country. If you've got more of an outbreak in London, say, and less of an outbreak in Wales, then obviously you want a different way of dealing with it. But at the same time, you also want to have a unified strategy so that you're not going to be arrested for doing something in one part of the country that you're not likely to be arrested for in another part of the country. And I also think that really Boris's hand was pushed here. Looking at the footage over the weekend, there were lots of people that were out in parks, hundreds of people that were out with a lone police car there, desperately trying to get people to go back inside. And I think really, if they tried to keep it going any longer, there would have been mass disobeying of the guidelines and the police just wouldn't have been able to do anything about it. So I think really Boris Johnson is preempting that and trying to keep on top of it so that the British public don't all engage in civil disobedience, basically. Now, I have got some news stories to get into today. I just want to add to what I was talking about last week. First, though, in the episode that I did called Why We Talk About Jews, I spoke about a book that was put out by the Frankfurt School, and it was actually called The Authoritarian Personality, not The Fascist Personality. And I also neglected to mention the fact that in all these times that when Muslims have invaded countries in the past, such as Spain, Bulgaria, even Persia, it's actually been the Jews that opened up the city gates to them. In every case, if you look back into history, it was Jews that opened up the city gates or facilitated the invasion of the Muslims into the country, and they were rewarded afterwards with these high positions. And I bring that up because it bears a resemblance to what we see today with Jews being overrepresented in the organisations that are advocating for immigration into our countries. There's one particular Jewish organisation in America that said allowing refugees into America is the most important thing for all Jews to be concentrating on in America, apart from support for Israel. It was second only to them in importance to gaining support for Israel. And what we see here is a recurring pattern, basically. It's a recurring pattern that we see, and we get accused of racism, we get accused of anti-Semitism for seeing it, but you can't deny history and you can't deny what's going on today with these advocacy groups. Anyway, I wanted to get into some news stories again today because we have actually got some non-corona news that we can talk about here. And the first news story comes from Britain. Pretty sad, really, the way that the government lets down the victims of crime, particularly this crime, which is grooming gang crime, Islamic grooming gang crime. And the victims are being let down just all over the place, not being allowed to see the review, which the government called for, to look at the ethnic aspect and the religious aspect of grooming gangs, and we're not allowed to see that. And now one of these victims is being forced to see her rapists in the town that she's from after she was told that they would be deported from the country. Three members of the Rochdale child sex gang are back in the town 2 years after losing the right to stay in Britain. And they don't actually tell us why they are still here, but they should have been deported. And the pictures from this, they're very recognisable pictures. These are the pictures that everybody saw. It was a highly publicised case of this grooming gang. And the victim was told that she would not have to ever see them again. And now they're in her town. One of them is a father of five, a cabbie, and a former teacher at a mosque. So how could they say that the rest of the community didn't know that this was going on when he was a teacher at the mosque? So he was obviously had a fairly respected position amongst the Muslim community, and yet he was involved in this. Another was known to victims by the sinister title, The Master. And also you would think that they would be rejected in their community after doing something like this. How come they are back living in the same place? How come they have been accepted back into the Muslim community of Rochdale after dragging their name through the dirt like this, through trafficking and raping white children? You would think that the Muslim community of Rochdale would not want anything at all to do with them, and would want to be seen as distancing themselves from them, not accepting them back. A girl who blew the whistle on taxi driver Kari Abdul Rauf and his accomplices said, "I thought Theresa May had organised his deportation. So how come he is still here? I feel violated to know that he is living near me, in the same area where he hunted for girls like me." And that's a very accurate term there, because they are predators, and that is what they were doing. They were looking for vulnerable young girls that they could then sexually victimise. So they are predators. They were hunting for the girls like that, and he's now back there rubbing his victim's face in the dirt. She says, "It's a total betrayal of grooming victims that he's allowed to stay." Well, it's not just the first betrayal of them, is it? The first betrayal of them was when they went to the police and the police refused to investigate it, when the police said it's more important that we don't increase community tensions. We'll just have to allow you to be raped. We can't possibly allow the so-called far right to actually be correct in what they're saying. We have to cover this up. That's what it boils down to. It boils down to not wanting nationalists to be proved correct in what they were saying. And it's all the other betrayals since then have grown on from that first original one. She spoke after pictures on social media showed Rauf, 51, in the Lancashire town. Dad of three, Abdul Aziz, 49, the master, and Adil Khan, 50, live nearby after also being freed from jail. They were locked up in 2012. And she was told that they were all going to be deported. The men are originally from Pakistan, and the Home Office said in 2015 it intended to remove their British citizenship. They claimed breach of human rights but lost an appeal in August 2018. A judge stated the men treated girls as though they were worthless and beyond all respect. So they lost their appeal. What are they still doing here? Why were they allowed to have an appeal? Why were they allowed to use legal aid to appeal against being sent back to their home country after they had behaved like this in the host country that they were living in? I mean, it's just beyond belief that we would allow them to stay here, that we would give them human rights anyway. They have behaved as though they are less than human. They have behaved like predators. They've dragged the name of their community through the dirt. They've treated their hosts with the utmost disgust. And it's just about the worst thing you could do is rape somebody's children, which is what they have effectively done. They have raped their hosts' children. And we are still bending over backwards for them. Instead of making an example of them, we've allowed them to stay here and continue taking advantage of our good natures. The Rochdale gang was portrayed in the BAFTA award-winning BBC drama, Three Girls. So it's not like this was a hidden case. This was a very highly publicised case. So highly publicised, in fact, that the BBC were forced to make a drama out of it. Rauf got 6 years for trafficking and sex with a girl 15. That's all he got. 6 years. Aziz got 9 years for trafficking and conspiracy to engage in sex with a child. Khan got 8 years for conspiracy and trafficking a 13-year-old girl who fell pregnant. So let's work out the times that this happened. What did they say there? 2012, that they were arrested. They were supposed to get 8 years and 9 years, which means that they should have been in prison up until this year and next year. But apparently they were appealing this in 2018. So they were actually out of prison in 2018. They would have been out in prison after doing just a third of their sentence. So they would have just done 2 or 3 years for destroying this girl's life and obviously countless others, hundreds of others, I suspect. And of course, these girls are too frightened to actually go to court. A lot of them are just too frightened to press charges, and you really can't blame them when they see the way that they are still being treated, when they see that people that were told were going to be deported in other cases are still here, when they see that the government is refusing to show the public the investigation into this, when they see that nobody in the establishment has been held to account for this. We haven't seen any police officers, politicians, judges, crown prosecutors. We haven't seen any of them losing their jobs and being taken to court for their part in covering this up. So why would any of these girls think that anything has changed? Because it doesn't appear that anything has changed, apart from the fact that the police have investigated a couple of these cases. They've done nothing about the fact that it was covered up in the first place. Nobody's been taken to account for that. And it looks like these punishments that they're being given are just really a slap on the wrist, aren't they? Out from prison within 2 or 3 years and not even deported, after Theresa May herself said that they would be. These victims have been really let down, and they're still being let down. Got another news story here that's about deportation. And this may explain the reason why these rapists weren't deported. Britain may be prevented from deporting dangerous foreign criminals if the healthcare system in their homeland is not as good as the NHS. Well, considering the NHS is considered to be one of the best health systems in the world, if they're going to hold that up as the standard, then anybody that comes into Britain can just claim that they're not going to get treated so well at home by the doctor, so they need to stay. I mean, what right do people that come from another country have to claim that they should even be treated by the National Health Service, the health service that was created to serve the British nations, not all the nations of the world? It was created to serve the ethnic British nations. And now it's being expected that they should be treating everybody. And according to this, if people aren't going to be as treated as well as the NHS in places like Africa, then they can't be sent back. A bombshell ruling from the Supreme Court means killers, rapists, and drug dealers may be able to exploit controversial human rights laws to stay in the UK if they can argue that they would be denied top quality care if they were sent home. So they have a right to top quality medical care now, after they have abused the host country. And this is a ruling that comes from the Supreme Court. And of course, it was the Supreme Court that overturned Boris Johnson's parliamentary prerogative last year when he wanted to prorogue Parliament, something that all prime ministers have been able to do for the last century. But because this would have helped Boris Johnson to get Brexit through, which he did manage to get through anyway, the Supreme Court decided that they would interfere in a matter which wasn't a matter of law. It was a matter of parliamentary prerogative. And this Supreme Court, it was shown, had political appointees who, of course, were big supporters of feminism, homosexual rights, diversity, and all the rest of it. So we really shouldn't be surprised that this Supreme Court now is making this decision that we can't deport people because they might not have such good doctors back in their home country. The landmark judgment, which risks throwing the government's deportation policy into chaos, has already delayed the case of gang rapist Yaqub Ahmed, whose deportation to Somalia in October 2018 was blocked by a mutiny among plane passengers at Heathrow. And listeners probably remember this. This took place after quite a well-publicised similar event took place in Sweden with this Swedish girl that started filming on her phone because there were some Africans being deported to Africa and she was refusing to allow the plane to leave. And this went viral, and the same thing happened at this plane in Heathrow, and these white passengers started saying, you can't possibly send him back to Somalia, he will be attacked by these Somalians, and the plane was held there. And this African was actually an horrific gang rapist, guilty of the horrific rape of this white victim, who thought that he had been deported already. And once again, she was forced to see the face of her rapist and forced to realise that her own people, her own white nation, members of her white nation, had prevented him from being deported. I mean, it's similar to this white grooming gang victim that was forced to see the face of her rapist that had supposedly been deported. Since the 2005 House of Lords ruling, the Home Office has been able to deport foreign criminals who are receiving medical care in Britain as long as they are not at imminent risk of dying from their illness. And some people might say, well, that's ridiculous. They should just be able to kick them out, whatever. But if somebody is at imminent risk of dying, then, yeah, you need to get them back to health first, I would suggest, before sending them off. If you've got somebody that's dying from, I don't know what, a collapsed lung or recovering from a heart attack, then yeah, fair enough. Not if it's somebody that has a condition that requires treatment for that, because they will just have to make do with the treatment that they can get in their own country. Why should they have access to the treatment that has been developed in a country that they have moved to, when they didn't contribute to that treatment being developed in the first place? They should just have access to the treatment that their own country and their own nation and their own people have developed. However, Supreme Court judges, including the controversial Baroness Hale, that was the one that took the credit for stopping Boris Johnson's proroguing of Parliament, have now adopted a lower threshold, as laid down by the European Court of Human Rights in 2016. Criminals now have only to prove they would experience intense suffering or a significant reduction in life expectancy if sent home. And of course, they could say that just if they wouldn't be able to afford the medicine there. All the medical treatment in Britain is provided without a cost to the individual because it's funded by taxes and national insurance by the people in Britain. But in a lot of these other countries, they have to pay for it themselves. So they could say, well, how am I going to be able to afford my medical care? I'm not going to be able to afford to buy these AIDS treatments in Africa. So I'm going to suffer intensely from that. And they'll be able to get away with that. And the other point here is that this Baroness Hale, what is she doing in introducing a lower threshold that was set out by the European Court of Human Rights when we're supposed to be leaving the European Union? I suspect she's trying to sneak this in before we've properly left. We have left, but during this one-year transitionary period, we still have to obey the laws of the EU, as far as I understand it. The ruling came in the case of a 33-year-old Zimbabwean father of one who arrived in the UK in 2000 and was later granted indefinite leave to remain. But he went on to be convicted of a string of offences in a two-year period, including battery, assault, receiving stolen goods, possession of sharp blades in public. His deportation was ordered in November 2006, but he was not removed, and in May 2009 was convicted of possession of a firearm and heroin with intent to supply. He was sentenced to 7 years in jail. What a list of offences there. Somebody that's been welcomed into Britain, granted leave to stay here. We've offered him our hospitality, and he's repaid us by carrying knives in public, assaulting people, thieving, threatening to shoot people, and selling heroin. 11 years on, he is still trying to block his deportation under the European Convention on Human Rights, which guarantees that no one shall be subjected to torture or to inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment. So not having access to the NHS is now the equivalent of torture, according to the Supreme Court of Britain. And he was supposed to have been deported in 2006. He was supposed to have been deported 14 years ago is the first time that they decided that he should be deported. And he's still here now. He claimed that as an HIV sufferer, deportation would deny him access to life-saving treatment as the antiretroviral medication Everplera is not available in Zimbabwe. The five Supreme Court justices ruled in his favour. Well, what they should do is deport him to the country next door. We've got deals with Africa. What we should be saying to Africa is if you want to have our foreign aid, then you have to accept African criminals that we wish to deport. That would solve the problem. And if that medication is not available in Zimbabwe, then surely they must have some other kind of medication that he could be given. How does Zimbabwe deal with its AIDS patients? Surely it must have some way of actually dealing with them, and he should just have to put up with that, the same that he would have to put up with whatever food they provide, or whatever food that they have in Zimbabwe, or whatever clothes they get in Zimbabwe. Or else he would have to order the medication himself. Surely he can order the medication on the internet and get it sent to him, and if he can't afford it, then tough, basically. You can't expect to have the same treatment that you get in the NHS everywhere else in the world. You can't expect to not have to actually pay for your medication just because for a few years while you were living the high life in Britain, you didn't have to pay for your medication. last night, critics called for the ruling to be overturned. I bet they did. Conservative MP Peter Bone said if this isn't reversed by legislation, then it will be used to keep more foreign criminals in this country. And that is not right. It's like these leftists and these judges, it's like they really hate the British people and they're all on the side of these foreign criminals, isn't it? You know, this is what we read about. We read about these Supreme Court justices halting deportations. Remember, a few months back, they halted deportations to Jamaica because the people that were being deported didn't have access to an O2 phone signal. And there was a big hullabaloo about this. There was 200 people that were supposed to be deported, and eventually it was only 50 people that were deported. And the reason why these deportations were stopped was because of these left-wing judges. The ruling has caused alarm at the Home Office, which deported more than 5,200 foreign criminals last year, but is grappling with soaring numbers, successfully avoiding being returned on human rights grounds, up from 60 in 2011 to 172 last year. Well, that's a very low figure, isn't it? Just 5,000 foreign criminals are deported every year. How many foreign criminals do we have in prison? There's probably more than 5,000 foreign criminals just in the prisons of London alone. Ahmed is awaiting the result of a legal challenge against his removal, but the judge in his case has asked for new legal submissions in light of the latest ruling. The 30-year-old, who was jailed for 9 years in 2008 for his part in the gang rape of a 16-year-old girl in London, claims his mental health has worsened as a result of being in detention. So the rapist that was on the plane that wasn't sent back to Somalia, he says it's made him depressed as a result of being in prison, so he can't be sent back to Somalia. I don't know why. I think he said that if he was sent back there because of the social stigma of him being charged with rape, he would be attacked. And that's a nonsense, because rape is not seen in the same way that it is seen over here in Africa, particularly not in Somalia. Africa is the rape capital of the world. I think something like at least half of the women there all admit to having been raped. I guess where he's claiming that his mental health has worsened as a result of being in detention, he's possibly trying to sue the government. I mean, as a result of being in detention, your mental health is supposed to worsen. It's supposed to be a punishment. It's not supposed to be a holiday. You're supposed to realize the error of your ways whilst being incarcerated. And yet here he is claiming his mental health worsened due to it. Another case in Strasbourg may make it even harder for the Home Office to kick out foreign criminals. Lawyers for a paranoid schizophrenic fighting deportation from Denmark to Turkey argue that although his drugs would still be available for free, he may not get other elements of his treatment package. Imagine that. So it's not just the fact that the medicine and the medicine isn't free, but the quality of the doctors isn't quite so good. So we can't send them back to Turkey. Never mind the fact that there are people that actually go on holiday to Turkey to get medical treatments like dentistry and plastic surgery because it's so much cheaper than it is in the European Union, but it's not good enough for the Turks themselves that have actually moved to Denmark. The UK government is so worried about any precedent that it has made a submission to the court. And last night, a Home Office spokesman said, "We are considering the ruling carefully before taking the next steps." You know, the solution to this really is the patriotic alternative solution, where you offer these criminals a financial incentive to give up their passports and go back to their own countries. I mean, just how much money has been spent on legal aid here for these people that are trying to fight extradition, trying to fight being sent back. I mean, they are criminals anyway. And if you were to have said to them, instead of going to prison, we'll pay you £10,000 if you give up your passport and accept citizenship again of the country that you come from, I wonder how many of them would do that. I think most of them would jump at that. And we wouldn't have all the legal aid costs. I mean, it must be costing hundreds of thousands of pounds just in legal aid costs for these criminals to try and appeal their deportation. And yet, if you were to just offer them money to do this, I think you could probably get rid of the majority of all the foreign criminals that we have in our prisons. And it's a very sensible policy that they have. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.